So this weekend, you went to a wedding, and to be clear, it was not your wedding, correct?
No. Okay. That won't have happened. I went to... No, marriage and kids are two things I've X'd off my to-do list a long time ago. I went to Derek's daughter's wedding, and we had a really, really fun time. I went with my friend Rachel. We had a great time. The wedding was beautiful. Derek couldn't have gotten a more beautiful weekend for his family. It was so incredible, so inspiring. Derek's father of the bride speech was hilarious. One day it's gonna it's one of those ones that's gonna go viral, but it didn't get rude or crude. It was just so funny. He was so funny. He was just like, he was like a Vegas comedian holding the mic. And I said, one day we got to publish that online, and I think he's excited to try and do that, so everybody might get a chance to see it one day.
I just to interrupt you, my heart just dropped.
Because you're gonna have to do that one day.
It just dawned on me that I'm gonna have to do that one of these days, and I will not get through it. I'm gonna start crying right now thinking about it.
I can imagine there were a couple of gentlemen there with daughters, and they were just like, "Whoa, I'm gonna have to do that one day, and that's gonna be rough." There was a couple of people we were talking about it.
That sounds terrible.
But the wedding was beautiful. It was at a private home right on the water in Maine. In what is the bay there? I can't remember what town it was in. It'll come to me, but it was so nice. The setting was beautiful. I'd never been up there, so it's a 7-hour drive from my house, so it was fun. That was just on the map, you know, with no bathroom breaks and no lunch breaks, so it took us 10 hours to get there and about 10 hours to get home, because we meandered and dilly-dallied. And I got home and I had to get right to work. As soon as I got home, Rob was already here preparing the workshop the next morning, which was Monday morning. This old house crew came to shoot a segment for their TV show Ask This Old House, and me and Kevin made a leather bag, and that was a lot of fun. That came out real good. We hit it really fast, and yesterday afternoon they were gone. So it was half of day one and basically half of day two. So it went really well. Got the shop tidied up for them. So it's always nice when you have to clean up for somebody else. When you clean up for yourself, you're like, I'll put that away next month. I'll put that away next week. You know, you walk around, but when you know someone's coming, you gotta get it together. And now here I am, and I told you guys quickly that I made this treasure chest for Derek's daughter's wedding, and I made that, and so that's going to be this week's video. I posted a picture of it online. So I started editing that up, and so I have an easy week. I just have to edit. I don't actually have to make anything.
Yeah, but you will.
I will, of course. Yeah. I don't even know what my next video is going to be after this treasure chest. I haven't even opened my notebook to look.
Does that bother you?
No, something always comes up. I was dealing with some real client jobs yesterday, so I was busy going back and forth with two potential client jobs that are real builds that won't be interesting for videos, but they'll be money. So I was going back and forth for that, and I wasn't even thinking about YouTube at all, just thinking about real world events that are boring and unexciting.
Yeah.
But that's cool. Besides that, it's already feeling like fall is coming in up here. You know, with the seasons changing and the weird weather, the leaves are probably going to be brown next week.
The last 2 days here have been very, very fall-like. You know, it dropped 10 degrees.
Yeah.
This morning I had the back door open and it was like nice enough to leave it open. I was like, oh, this is great. And then I looked at the weather. It's going to be 93 on Monday.
Oh, oh, well.
But, yep, one of these days. Well, David, what have you been up to?
I've just finished up the desk build, which we took two side tables and then converted them into a desk. And that video has come. What? Oh, it's not out yet. Sorry. No.
You posted a picture of it or something, though, right?
I put a little teaser on Instagram last night. Yeah.
All right. That's what I saw. It's gorgeous.
Thank you. So that's probably going to come out on Sunday, and then got to get back to the speaker build. I haven't done anything with the speakers. I haven't done the experimental stuff since we talked last week. So we're still working on that. Other than that, there's not much going on. I just got to finish up these two videos so I can move on with my life. We were talking before the show. Like, I've been working on these two things for 2, 3, 4 weeks now. And I get bored with a project really quick. And we were talking about Jimmy's pool table, where he's been working on it since like last September. And I can't even imagine working on something that long.
Yeah, I mean, you also made the joke about, you know, it taking up that, not having the space to right. keep something like that, you know, and not just work straight through it. And I didn't think about it when you said it, but that is like a pretty legit reason to not do something like that, is just the amount of, like, the span of time it takes and the amount of footprint that it eats up during that time. And if you don't just stay on it until it's done, you got to have a lot of extra room, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You got to have, like, four shops and farm and a farmhouse and like 300 trucks. You got to have a bunch of stuff. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I'm going to make a big auction one day when I drop that. It's going to be a nice auction. But the pool table now is right where I wanted to do my truck restoration, which is my next big video, which I'll start working on eventually in the next few weeks.
You should put a pool table in the back of the truck, and then you could drive. I guess you'd only be able to shoot from three sides.
We talked about that. We came up with that idea. Right? But speaking of the pool table, it's 1 of 10, which is, in the YouTube terms, is a really big deal and hard to attain. So it's doing well, thankfully. It's a 40-minute video where I kind of drone on and I say the word ultimately too many times if you watch it. But it's doing
nobody's noticed that.
No, read the comments.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was doing the voiceover because we left last Thursday to go to Maine, and it was Bar Harbor is where I went. I just remember the name. So I had to get the chest done, and I had to get that video done ready to upload for Friday because it was a type on video and they were mentioned in it, and so they wanted it up. And I wanted it up because I was held accountable for them, so I didn't want to ask for any more time. And I edited it up till 3 a.m, went to sleep, and then we left at 1 the next day. But during that up until that 3 a.m, I was doing voiceovers about 5 to 10 minutes at a time because I was getting so tired and losing track of what I was thinking about. So when you listen to that voiceover, it's a little droney. I'm a little monotone. And I started listening back, and I'm like, do I end every segment of my recording with the word ultimately?
I start mine with so. It's the same thing.
Yeah. I cut the word so out, and I had to cut the word ultimately out of like the second half. So the first half is heavy ultimately. The second half is not as many.
I also start with so quite a bit, and I've never taught myself to stop saying it because it gets that momentum going, and I know I'm just going to cut it out of the video.
Exactly. That's what I try to do.
Do you intentionally leave a little cut point right after you say that, or is it just natural?
It's just natural. Yeah.
I'm really good at I could take this right now, and what I'm saying right now, and turn it into a different sentence. I'm really good at cutting up audio when it's so tight on top of each other. I'm really good at like getting in there and splicing right between two words, and I could make a sentence out of anything. I'm pretty good at that.
Well, that sounds like a challenge right there.
That's fun.
We should send him sentences of us saying things and tell him to make it say something else. Completely different.
Yeah. AI.
See if he can do it.
I think one of the reasons I get bored with projects so quickly is I have this idea of what it's going to look like in the end. And the first couple of days of the project, that's when you see all this progress. That's when you're building the skeleton of the thing and you're cutting wood and you can see the progress. But then when I get to the details take way longer than I ever expect. And one little detail might take a whole day to do, but it doesn't feel like I did a whole day's worth of work. And I think that's when I start to get bored with the project, is when I get down to the little details.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I'm kind of the same way when it comes to sanding, finishing, all of the stuff that doesn't actually move it. I mean, it moves it forward, but not in a way
not
that
visually
feels like, yeah, doesn't feel super productive. Although yesterday, so I've been working on a new bedside table, like an end table. And I made it all out of cherry. I had a little bit of cherry plywood left over, and so I scavenged together the scraps that I had and like made panels from them. And then I have a bunch of solid cherry. So it's a combination. And they actually, even though cherry has a lot of color variation, they actually ended up being, it looks nice together. It looks like it's all from like one chunk of stock. Anyway, I put finish on this thing yesterday after I finished it, and it was like, wow, like I want to sand that off and do it again just so I can see the transformation, because it looked so different. I used it's called Wood Honey from Total Boat. It's like a honey polyurethane or something. I don't even know what's in it, so I don't know. and it has taken forever to dry. That's the only bad thing. But it was one of those like immediate transformations of, you know, it's almost done. I'll just got to put finish on it. To wow, that thing is done, and it looks fantastic, and it looks better than what it did, you know, beforehand. So that one was gratifying. But usually, I dread that part of it. That was my point. So for me, I've been working on that table for the last few days, and it's been an interesting. It was the one that I was talking about last week about the design thing. There's a catch to it that I'm not going to tell now, but it was a challenge design wise to get to something that, you know, as you look at it now, it looks fine. It looks nice. It's not, you know, nothing special. I'm not going to win any furniture awards or anything, but working around the mechanism that I was kind of teasing was really throwing me for a loop. And, I think I ended up just having to kind of let go of the, I had this core idea, this mechanical idea that I was trying to work around, and I had to throw that mechanical idea away and start from the outside and work in. And so I know that's really vague and doesn't make a lot of sense, but I, on this one, instead of going function to form, I started with form and modified the function to effectively do the same thing, but it just worked within the form that I was looking at. And that was a stretch for me. I know a lot of people, that's how they work anyway, but that was tough. But I think it turned out pretty good, so we'll see. It's coming out next week, not this weekend. And then I've been trying to just, you know, clean up the shop and kind of reorganize and reset stuff, try to make some room. It's, you're muted, Jim.
Did you ever get the plasma cutter going?
I did, yeah. I've made a couple of small cuts on it, and it works. But I haven't, like, I don't have a specific project lined up. I have a couple of ideas, but I don't have a specific thing to cut. And so I kind of don't want to just,
yeah,
you know, test. It's an expensive thing to test material-wise. But, yeah, I've got a couple ideas coming up that I think might be fun to use it on. So, but it works. And I was also, I think I told you guys about this. Did I tell you about the lathe? My metal lathe, my soft bend.
I think you said you were going to sell it.
Yeah. So I don't know if I said that on here, but I decided I was going to sell the south bend because I've only used it a couple of times. I'm not real comfortable with it. It's big. I could use the space. And so I put it on. This is crazy. This is a whole thing that I don't think I told you guys. So I put it on Facebook Marketplace. And I immediately started getting views on it. So there is interest in it. And I've had several people, you know, reach out and ask about it and stuff like that. And this guy in Texas sent me a message and asked me a couple of vague questions about it. And then was like, I'm going to send you a check for the amount to hold it. And then I'll set up shipping. I'm like, okay, well, that's fine. As soon as the check clears, I'll let you know. You know, I'm not going to, like, do anything until I actually have money in the account. So I get this check, and I went and deposited it. And then after the fact, I got home, and I set the bottom half of the check, you know, the stub or whatever, on my desk. And when I set it down, I looked at the address, and it was a North Carolina address. And I'm like, huh, that's weird. So then this company on there, this name, I looked up this name, and it was a construction company in North Carolina. I'm like, all right, well, I mean, it's possible that this guy has some, you know, he's in Texas, maybe he works remote, I don't know. So I started, like, messaging him, and he said, okay, well, in that check, and he told me he was going to do this ahead of time, I included some money for you to pay the delivery people. When they pick it up, they have to have money in hand. Like, okay, so, you know, he starts messaging me about, like, well, what day can I have the delivery people come? And I said, well, you know, any day, if with enough notice, any day works. He goes, and this was on Thursday, I think. He said, well, what about Saturday? And my Spidey sense immediately started, like, blinking. I'm like, there's no shipping company ever that would just be like, sure, we'll bring a delivery truck to this place in 2 days and pick up a tool with no information about what it is, or, you know, it just like felt super weird. And so I'm like, I mean, Saturday works for me, you know, just let me know the shipping company. And so he sends me a Zelle address, like a payment address. And he said, you have to send that money to this address for them to schedule the thing. And I'm like,
oh boy.
And the email address for the Zelle account was like Mary365 at Gmail or whatever, you know. I'm like, all right. So I start asking the guy, I'm like, so what's your association with this company name? And he said, HR. I'm like, huh. So I get on the website, I call this company. There's like four people listed on the website. And I leave a message for the secretary finance lady, and you know, she's not calling me back. And this is right before lunch. So I leave her a message. The guy starts messaging me every 5 minutes. Like, so do we have a deal? Like, have you sent that money yet or whatever? And I'm like, well, I'm verifying your employment with this company. And he said, okay. I'm like, all right, cool. Well, he didn't fight back. Like, maybe I'm being overly cautious. So after lunch, he's still bugging me. I still haven't heard back from this company. So I call a few more times, call different extensions, trying to find a different person, just somebody to talk to. And finally talk to this guy who's also named Bob. And I said, hey man, I'm trying to buy something on Facebook. Here's the situation. Gave him the rough details, and it had your name on the check, and it deposited into my account, and the money is there. That means, if I'm correct, this guy is stealing your money and making me the culprit by me having the money that you stole, and he's trying to get me to pay it out from my account to this Zelle account. And he's like, man, we've been dealing with fraud stuff for like 2 weeks. He said, we've had so many people pulling money from our account, and our bank cuts it off. We get the money back. It's not actually hurting us. It's hurting the people that they're using in between, because I would get stuck with losing my money because it would get drawn back. So I said, all right, I will tell my bank to like just put the money back, you know, and get me out of it. And he was going to let his bank know, and he let this finance lady know and whatever. And so she called me back later on and was really grateful that I caught it and stuff, because like I said, it wouldn't really hurt them, but they're dealing with it a lot. And so I just wrote the guy a message. I'm like, man, you should be ashamed of yourself. People work really hard, and you are, you know, this is terrible. You should not be taking advantage of people. And then just like blocked him. And so I don't know, he'll probably do it to somebody else. But there's no way to track people down like that. There's no way to out somebody, you know, through Facebook. I mean, after all this, I went back and looked at his profile again. Oh, another thing I forgot to say. Along the way, while he's bugging me, I'm trying to make small talk to keep him kind of on the hook. And his profile said he was from Oklahoma but lived in Houston. And so he's from Oklahoma, right? So I said in this chat, I'm like, hey, what part of Texas did you grow up in? I have friends in Dallas or something. I just made something up. And he said, Waco. And I'm like, man, you liar. You turd. And so after all this, I went back and looked at his profile more, and you know, like I just didn't pay attention that it didn't have certain information on it. It was somebody else's profile he had gotten a hold of, and he had removed stuff and whatever. So he
was able to fraudulently send checks from this company. Maybe he had something to do with the company, or he stole.
I don't think so. No, they didn't know his.
Identity.
I mean, who knows what his real name was? They didn't.
But
know
he stole
the
their banking information. Was able to send a check.
Yeah, he falsified checks.
And so you get that, you were supposed to send maybe 30% of it back to him?
Yeah. Wow. Yep. And then, so then the original amount would have gone back out of my account back to the original bank from the fraudulent check, and I would have been out that 30%. So now, the people that I'm talking to about the lathe are a state away, and they want to come look at it, and they know that it has to have... It's cash only, and it's, you know, like I'm asking them questions about lathes, and they're asking me about, you know, the tooling that's with it and very specific stuff. So it's a little bit more legit, but I'm still, my guard's up. Like I hate that you have to second guess people's integrity like constantly. It just, I mean, that's the state of the world, but it's a bummer to me. Anyway, so if you're going to sell anything online, word to the wise to everybody, the only payment methods that have any kind of safeguard to them at all are cash and PayPal. And even PayPal is not like foolproof, but Zelle, Venmo have no safety measures in place for getting your money back or for tracking people and being able to find out who they are, where they are, any of that stuff. Those are just, those should only be used for friends and family.
Every time you introduce somebody new to Zelle, they make you sign a thing that says, you know who this person is.
Hmm. Have you guys ever been scammed? Scammed? Like, where it's gone through?
I don't think I ever have. I mean, there was just that one time, I think I was on the podcast with you guys, and tens of thousands of dollars was leaving my account that morning. You guys remember that panic about 5 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
It was my accountant's payroll person paying somebody out of my account. So really, that was rough. But I got
the only time I've actually gotten scammed was... It was actually last year one time I tried to buy some parts from there's a Facebook user group for Land Cruisers, and so there's always people on there selling parts constantly. And this one guy had, I don't even remember what it was, but I was trying to buy something from him, and he, you know, gave me shipping information and all the stuff. It like sounded totally legit, and it was a pay through Venmo thing. And this was before I realized that there were no protections on Venmo. So I paid him, you know, $150 or whatever it was. It wasn't a crazy amount. And then just gone. I got nothing else from him. And so in those groups, there's always people being reported publicly to the group. You know, don't trust this person. This person scammed me. This person's doing this thing. They look like a scammer. They stole photos from so-and-so. But what about you, David? Have you?
Yeah, on eBay and PayPal years ago, before the YouTube thing, I needed a new computer, and I found a used one on eBay, and it was $1,100, and I borrowed the money from my sister because I didn't have the money myself, and bought it. This guy had an 80 some percent rating at the time. And there was lots of communication, and then all of a sudden he just stopped communicating and never sent it. And so I filed a dispute, and because it went through PayPal, I think out of the $1,100, I got back $200 or $300.
Really?
And because he didn't have like a 95% or higher rating, hopefully it's different now. This was years ago, maybe 2008 or so. They couldn't guarantee the whole transaction. They could only guarantee a part of it. So I got like $200 or $300 back. So I got scammed out of a computer.
Dang.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope that's different now. That's kind of crazy.
I remember having a conversation, now that I'm thinking about it. I didn't transact, we didn't have any transactions, but the guy had an Airstream for sale, and it was reasonably priced. It was like $10,000 Airstream, and he said he was from my neighborhood, and so I started emailing him like, where's your Airstream? He goes, oh, it's in upstate New York. But I was communicating with somebody supposedly in the Lower East Side. That's where the listing was, and we were going back and forth, and he started saying, oh, well, I'm in the Air Force, and it's in storage, so I need to pay the storage. And it was just this whole stupid story, and I was like, how stupid do you think I am? I was like, tell me the address of the Airstream, I'll go look at it. If it's not what I want, I won't buy it. Like, it's that simple. He's like, no, well, you need to help me pay the fee for the thing so that you can get inside. And I was just like, it's ridiculous.
You got to contact my brother, who's a Nigerian prince.
Yeah. It was like, it started going down this whole long story. And I'm like, I wonder how many people fall for this. I was just like,
yeah.
If you have it and you're not lying to me, which it feels like you are, just tell me where it is. I'll go look at it. I'll look at it through a fence. I don't care.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was like a one day exchange, but I was just laughing. Like, how many people fall for this? This is horrible.
I mean, people probably do fall for it. You know, there's all different levels of trust. And I think that's one of the things that, like I said a minute ago, that it bums me out, because I do give people the benefit of the doubt until I have a reason not to, in general. And I hate that, like, online, if you're buying something, I can't really work that way. Like, I mean, if you want to get scammed, but to safeguard yourself, you just can't really do that. And it's, I don't know, sad. We do have a topic today. That was not the topic. We do have a topic. But before that, Somebody was asking about a link for the Russellville meetup at the factory.
Yes.
Do you have, is there a link to an event of some sort?
Or not exactly. What information can we share? Well, Dave reached out to me directly and I gave him the thing, but I could announce it here right now. I'm just looking for the framed image so I can give everybody the exact information. Okay, we're having a factory meetup. It's at the Nile Industries factory. That's the factory that I'm involved with Howard and Jordan. And it's Tuesday, August 29th at 6 p.m., 1509 East Main Street in Russellville, Arkansas. Be there or be square. Open to whoever's in the area, whoever wants to come. And, you know, six to question mark. I don't know how long it'll go, but we're just going to have a hangout, meet up, show off what we're working on. It's going to be news to me because when I was out there with Jordan, we hadn't had a place yet. We was just looking at locations. We hadn't even set up anything. Jordan did all the dirty work. Thank you, Jordan. And so I'm going to go out there and see it for the first time myself. So that's Tuesday, August 29th. I guess that's 2 weeks from yesterday.
I will be there. I rented a car.
Oh, good.
Driving to Arkansas.
Yeah, Jordan said he was going back and forth with you and that you might come. Good.
Yeah.
Awesome. It'll be good. That's good. So we're going to just basically, we've picked up several Etsy shops. And that's really our focus for this particular factory is to find people that are sick of making things in their garage and they need a little bit more of an up level. We're not going for like government contracts. We're going for middle class Etsy people. We're not trying to get the entire world. And it's working. We got a guy asked me the other day if I could make 30,000 wooden balls. And so me, Howard, and Jordan are talking about how to make wooden balls. We're going back and forth. The guy needs it for a specific purpose. He's going to need that many per year. So we're going back and forth, and we're looking at machines to make wooden balls. And so it's fun. It's a fun and it's challenging. And you know, it's all made in the USA, which is something that's so impossible to come by these days. Yeah. That was really the impetus of the whole thing. We'll see where it goes. It's going well at the moment, and there's plenty of room to expand. We're working on getting some metalwork started. We're working with a factory that does exclusively metalwork. It's a company, it's a business that's up and running, and he's tired of making things in his backyard. So we are going to take it and bring it there and buy all the machines he has. And, you know, as long as everything pays for itself to get started, and then we'll have that facility ready to do metalwork. So we're trying to take on these type of challenges.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun. Very it's cool. fun. And then also make things for all of us, makers. If, you know, like I might make an interesting, well, for instance, I made the yardstick, and then the yardstick can be branded for whomever wants to make it for their website, as an example.
Yeah. We've been talking with Jordan about a couple of ideas for the factory to make stuff for us. So hopefully that'll work out, and we'll see.
Great.
Cool. Well, I will see you there.
Awesome. And so let me read the message we got from our buddy Jason. Jason Brown, who I met years ago in my Lower East Side shop, sent me a message this morning. He said, I've been thinking about topics for the Making a Podcast. If you can show people that you are inspired by the work that you are doing, it doesn't matter what you do. People will tune in. And I believe that. And it's funny, I always groan and moan when I'm in the middle of making the boat, I'm in the middle of making the pool table. But there's always that moment of time. Somewhere there was a chart. It's like, I can't believe I did this. Oh my God, what did I get into? I hate my life.
Yeah.
I hate my life. Oh my God, I'm so cool. You know, there's like those four stages. And I go through that every single time.
Yeah.
I'm so inspired. Oh my God, this is going to be hard. I hate everybody. Wow, look what I made. So it's that type of thing, but there's more curse words in between. And so he said, if you can show people that you're inspired by the work that you're doing, it doesn't matter what you do, people tune in. And he gives the example of Derek, my buddy from Vice Grip Garage. I never wrench on a car, but I like watching Vice Grip Garage. Damn if I don't leave thinking that I could do anything just because Derek's so, he's so funny and he really figures everything out, so. And then he gives you a compliment, Dave. He says, Dave's been telling you guys all along how to be successful. Just stay passionate. So what do you guys think about that? I believe it's true. It is for me. But like I said, I go through those four phases, and it's always toward the end of the phase where I'm like, I'm going to become a pool table manufacturer now. That's it. I'm going to sell all my stuff and whatever it is, whatever that look. I'm going to start making treasure chests now.
What do you think, David?
Well, first of all, I want to address the stay passionate thing. That was something I said randomly many, many years ago when I was in the basement workshop, and it kind of stuck. I ended every video with be safe, stay passionate. And it's, I still say it, but it's got me think, how do you stay passionate if you do this, if you stick with the skill for decades? So am I as passionate about woodworking as I was when I got started? Yes and no. And I love woodworking, but regular woodworking kind of bores me, which is why I'm trying to do these like transformation pieces and doing something that's, I found I was playing it safe too much. Like, oh, I know how to do this. I'm going to make this. There's nothing at stake. And now it's like, I'm trying to get out of the box a little bit and out of my comfort zone. So that's, I struggle with the word passionate now where I didn't before.
Well, okay. I mean, with that, do you think that's because, well, I don't know how to ask that question. What if you change the view of the thing that you're passionate about, or mm-hmm. the thing that, you know, so you, maybe in the beginning you thought you were passionate about woodworking. In the reality, maybe you were passionate about just making a thing. It happened to be woodworking at the time. Mm-hmm. And then now you making a thing is just a different thing, but you're still passionate about the process, yeah. about the creative yeah. end of, you know, so it's like a perspective thing, not necessarily that, you know, woodworking is not what you're passionate about anymore. Yeah. I think you could easily change the view of that and still have it be true.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I also, somewhere along the line of this journey, it started about me love the woodworking aspect, and now I love the video making aspect, and they're either equal, or I love making videos more than I love woodworking. It's like this weird thing. So I love editing, and it's why I've dabbled in having other people edit my videos, and I don't like it. I love I feel like the editing is part of the creative process for me.
I agree. I feel the same way. That's why I never really give up the editing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's nice to try and unpack that puzzle and figure it out. It obviously takes a long time, which is the grueling part of it. But when you start getting a video to develop a rhythm, you just throw all the clips in when you're editing. That's what I do. I throw all the clips in sequential order. And then I start chipping them apart. And then I just go, well, how does this piece relate to this piece? And how does this piece relate to that
piece? It's a sculpture.
One after another.
You're chipping and really, away.
And when it starts to develop a rhythm, you start to be like, okay, I got this. I'm glad I did this.
There was
10 minutes before that, you're like, wow, why did I chose to do YouTube?
Yeah. I've always loved the editing, but I always felt like, oh, everybody else has an editor. I should do the same thing. So it felt like, oh, I need to keep growing my business until I can afford to get an editor, because that's what I'm supposed to do. And then Casey Neistat, in his interview with the Digital Spaghetti, is that the name of the channel, Bob? With Jack Conte? Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's just like, yeah, I would never let anybody else edit my videos. This is it's who I am. And it kind of like gave me permission to enjoy the editing and not think about giving it to somebody else. So, but it is the bottleneck in my business. And I totally forgot what the original question was.
Well, but I mean, I think either way, like you're saying, your mantra that you have now stuck to is stay passionate. You're not saying stay passionate about woodworking. You're saying staying passionate about something.
That's true.
And if that something moved from woodworking to editing, or editing to design, or, you know, whatever,
right.
That's still true, right? Yeah. And I think that's growth on your part to just be able to find the part of all the different things that you do that matters the most to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all have to do all sorts of things. And I was having a conversation yesterday with my friend Andy about this. We all have to do so many different jobs in this, even if we have a team of people. Everybody has to do multiple jobs. And you can do all of them at, you know, you can do 5 jobs at 20%, or you can do 2 jobs at 50%. And that matters. Like, the way that you spread yourself across the stuff that you have to do has a lot to do with how effective you are, which also is probably because of how much you enjoy those things. So narrowing that field of things to, I really enjoy editing and I want to do it because that's, you know, a big part of this, like, that's a growth thing. That's a narrowing in on the part that you love, or one of the parts that you love, or whatever. So I think that's a good thing. I don't. I mean, I don't hate it, but it's not. It's just work to me. The editing stuff is not something that I creatively get a whole lot out of. It's something I can do if I have to, but I think other people are better at it. And I have other parts that I've defined for myself that, you know, they're the part that I feel more passionate about. Hmm. So, but back to our original question. So, Jimmy, the question was what?
Well, let me just read the phrase again, just to see if there really was really more of a statement than anything else.
Well, but it was about, it was a claim.
If you could show people you're inspired by the work you do, it doesn't matter what you do. People tune in. And, you know, that's certainly true. I mean, I watch stuff all the time that I'm not going to do. Lately, I've been watching guys rock climbing, believe it or not. I see more on Instagram. And also, I follow this Mount Everest thing. And I just sit there and I go, how could somebody be so passionate to do something that's so, like, on the edge of... You know, I watch guys do wheelies all the time. Like, you ride that fine line, that adrenaline thing. And some of these guys are so passionate about rock climbing, mountain climbing, and riding motorcycles. It's like kind of more of a thing. Like, I would never put myself in that situation, but these people are so entrenched in it, and it keeps me attracted to it. It's a little bit more of like an adrenaline rush, but I certainly watch. There's a guy who's an incredible stone carver. I don't think I'll ever be that good, and I'll never even try to do a big 3D in the round stone sculpture the way this guy does. But I watch it because you could just tell the amount of training and the amount of discipline and the amount of history that this person displays definitely rubs off. The energy of that rubs off on me as a creative person. It's like, wow, he's able to see the face inside that rock, and he'll make... Well, you see the guy that makes the pillows? His videos have been going really viral.
Oh, yeah.
He carves stones. He makes pillows. His whole motivation is to make stone look like something soft. And he has a giant chunk of Carrara marble carved into a pillow with a big piece of rock on it. And it's like the same thing. They're both the same thing. But one looks beautiful to the touch, and the other one looks rough to the touch. I see people like that, and I say, wow. They never give up. They'll never stop. The amount of learning and the amount of discipline, and I look at that, and it just rubs off. There's no way it can't, you know, unless you're just like scrolling and scrolling. It's like, what do they call it? Dead scrolling? I don't know what they call that.
Doom scrolling.
Bob says he has a little counterpoint to this, a little pushback, and I do too, but I want to hear Bob's version of it, because it's probably the same thing that I'm thinking, but I want to see.
Yeah, probably. So, I mean, I think in theory, that statement that, like, if as long as you're passionate about something, people will watch it. Yes, in theory. And I think if you look at YouTube as the people on YouTube who watch videos, the number of people there is astronomical. So I do think that there's probably an audience for pretty much anything that you want to do. Like, if you care about it and you're willing to put in work on something, there are people that will be interested in it. So I think that is true. But I think 10 years ago, when we all started this and it was very young, the likelihood of you doing just what you care about and it being able to be seen was very high. These days, I don't think that is true. And I don't think that's really has anything to do with passion, but being inspired. I think the landscape and the logistics of being able to find interesting things is very, very different now. And that's not me complaining. That's just the reality of what I think the technology and society is all right now. So my point in saying that is my pushback is it is way harder today to be passionate about a thing and be inspiring and get it in front of the people who would want to see it. I think they're out there. But that transaction of doing a thing and getting it to the people that care or that it would affect is very difficult, you know, especially if you have guide rails around what you want to do. So recently I had a conversation with somebody about, you know, the nature of YouTube and how hard it is to get views and stuff. And he was like, you know, it might be time for you to look at Mr. Beast and start to emulate some of the stuff. And I'm like, man, like, what in the world? I like, no disrespect to successful people, but his point was maybe you should loosen your standards a little bit. People are interested in a certain type of sensationalism or whatever, whatever adjective you want to put in there. People are used to that thing. Maybe it's time for you to loosen your standards so that you can get those people. And I felt disgusting after that. Somebody like trying to push me to just, maybe you should not be yourself so much. And, but if you want views, like maybe you should just do what everybody else is doing a little bit. And I was like, ew. Like, what am I going to, like, whoever can stand at the bandsaw long and, you know, the longest and hold their pee while they're using a tool is going to get $1,000. Like, I come on.
That's my a point great idea, is, actually. Can I use that?
Well, it was funny because we were like, we were joking about that, trying to make light of the situation because we were kind of arguing about it. And he was like, well, we would only do that if the video could make enough money to cover the lawsuit for them all getting UTIs by standing at the bandsaw, you know, holding your pee long enough while you're using the tool. My point is, it is very easy for sensational things, what I think of as kind of impersonal things, to get a lot of attention right now. I think you have a harder time if whatever you're passionate about is not sensational. Those things are separate, but I think if you just care about making pottery and you really, really care about it and you're really interesting and fun to watch, it's just not the same as who can touch this car longer than anybody else. And I think it's just, I'm trying to be realistic with people who are looking at doing this, what we do. It's not the same as it was a while back. Your passion is going to drive you to a more narrow field of people, which is great. But be aware that it's driving you to a more narrow field of people than what is out there. And the reality of just love it and people will come, I'm not sure that it's the same as it used to be.
Well, I think it gets back to what your expectations are. And I had this conversation with a friend last night, and I was talking about how I look at old videos of me doing something, anything, you know, making a key, and it's got 1 million views. If I did that now, it would get 20,000 views. I'm just as passionate about making whatever it is, the treasure chest or whatever it is that I did once before. It's just not the same audience. The audience is so much more splintered. There's so many more things to watch. There's so many more sensational YouTubers now with, you know, Jake Paul and Whistling Diesel and... And I love all these guys. I watch them all, and Mr. Beast, you know, they're fun. I totally can dig where they're coming from. And they're so passionate about what they do because they're having fun doing it and obviously making a lot of money. But when I look at my videos, my friends suggested, oh, would you change? I was like, you know, I'm not going to go and, you know, test the strength of Milwaukee versus DeWalt or any of these things. I said, my mantra is my videos are like songs, and I want them to be somewhat timeless. And so I'm just still, and it goes back to what I say every week, I'm just building my library for that big ta-da one day when someone's like, hey, we started a new channel, it's called, you know, YouTube Plus, whatever, and we want, you know, all the whatever. I just know it's out there. I know that my library will be worth something someday, maybe not in my lifetime, but it's going to live on in timeless videos. It's not going to be a novelty video watching somebody do something that's like specific to that time, like talking about a drill. So I continue to make the videos I started making with a little bit more complication because my education level has increased because I'm passionate about what I do. And for instance, when you see this new treasure chest that I made versus the one that I made, and I'll put it in the video, versus the one that I made years ago, the one I made years ago was like folding paper and just finding random bits of wood. It was very lazy if I look at it now and think, but that's where I was at that time. Now I took the time to blacksmith every joint. I riveted it. When I think about welding 15, 20 inches of weld, I'd be like, oh, that's so much time and energy and sweat and grinding. I'd be like, let me just tack it. And then, you know, so that's how I did that first one. So there's so many little things that I think of 8 years ago versus what I did now, and that's just because I was more and more passionate about learning and learning and learning. But as far as YouTube goes, it's really just what your expectations are. If you're getting into this to be a Mr. Beast, you got to do that Mr. Beast stuff. Right. But if you're getting into it to share your skill and meet people like us that want to help you grow as a passionate woodworker or a metal worker or a sculptor or whatever it is you want to do, then there's plenty of room.
I think that's absolutely fair. Yes. Yeah. Expectation and your goals, what you're trying to accomplish with it. Now, the counterpoint to what I said is people like Blacktail Studios, people like Bourbon Moth, who are really good at what they do and have a blast doing it. And it shows in the video, it shows in the views, it shows in all, you know, like I'm not right here. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, I'm trying to almost give a cautionary tale about the expectation, I guess, like what it is that you know will come out of just being passionate about something, just being inspired. I think that is one of the many ingredients that it takes to, you know, you got to set your goals, your expectations, like you're saying, and then that inspiration is one of the necessary ingredients to be able to get to whatever those goals are. Your personality, your camera presence is one of the ways that that can come out. It's not, you know, it's not exactly the same thing, but you talk about like Vice Grip Garage, so much fun to watch. I don't know what he's like in real life. I've never met him. I know you know him, but like so
he's
much
pretty
fun.
Similar. He seems pretty similar. We've only talked on the phone. I might do a segment with him. We were talking about working together. So in September, I might go and hang out with him in Tennessee and do a segment with him.
So but I mean, that's a really good example of like, he's just naturally, I assume, that way. And he draws you to him. You would want to hang out with him if you were just a guy that was around, you know? So I think being inspired about the thing that you care about is a big part of it. How you present yourself is another thing. I'm a little bit more of an introvert. I have to work pretty hard to interact with the camera. You know, I would not have a camera on me. I would not be around people. I would be in the shop by myself with my head down doing things, and I would be okay with that. And so I recognize that, you know, my approach to the things that I care about is very different than somebody who's an extrovert or just more personable. You know, there's a lot of stuff involved. And the only reason I'm saying all this is just to counterpoint a little bit that it's not one thing. It's a bunch of things. Where you're trying to get to, what your goals are, what you're trying to accomplish is one end of it. The other end of it is what you've got to work with, what your personality is like, you know? So it's just not a simplified solution of like, if you build it, they will come. I don't think it's quite true.
But you got to start somewhere. You got to start somewhere. Absolutely.
Totally.
If you build it, some people will come.
There you go. That's a way better title than what I had in the podcast.
Yeah, that's for the most part. That's pretty much what I was.
It is true.
Pretty much what I was thinking. I do enjoy the game of. There's this. I like creating and transforming things. I greatly like. I go back and forth of the like. Will this work on YouTube?
I partially like.
Yeah. Sometimes I love it. Sometimes I don't. The game of like, will this work on YouTube? Because if I just made thing, if there's no way for me to create the things that I'm making, I wouldn't be making these things. If I wasn't making videos, I wouldn't take these two side tables and make them into a desk. I'd probably just make a desk, and that desk would probably look like every other desk. This desk that I'm making so I'm trying to do things that are outside my comfort zone because I needed to succeed on YouTube because it is my job. So it's like it's that struggle of the artist of like, I want to make something that's pure, but I also want to do it for a living. So you got to compromise, and so.
Yeah.
That is the constant struggle with what I do. And I think without parameters, without the job of being a YouTuber, I wouldn't think I would be as creative.
I agree with that.
I agree with that. I would never do half of the things I've done if it wasn't for YouTube.
Yeah. And the same thing goes with sponsors. Like, I said like 15 times in the last 2 minutes. if I didn't have the sponsors, I would get a little bit more lazy with the videos. You would see one video a month or one video every 2 months. But because there's a deadline, it's forcing me to think. And we talked about this last week where ideas just don't come to me anymore. That's just not a thing that happens. I have to set aside time to come up with ideas. And so it's forcing me to be who I am, I guess, now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is kind of a weird It's not bad, but it is kind of weird, you know, that
if
the situation drives us to do stuff we wouldn't normally do. I wonder if that's
if you got hired by a company because you're a great project manager, right? Of course, you're going to bring in your skills and you're going to be passionate about being a project manager, but you also have to play within the rules of that company that you're working for. So there's no matter what you do, whether it's YouTube or in the corporate world, you got to compromise and you got to learn to play the game.
That's a really good example. Yeah. I had a couple comments on, I think it was the most recent video, and they were from this one guy back to back. And the first one, I don't remember exactly what they said, but the thing I felt and I took away from the first one was, I like it better when you don't have sponsors because it feels this way. Whatever. And then the next one, like right after it was, but I also totally understand that you have to have sponsors to do the thing. And I get that, you know, it was like two, like, I prefer the old Bob, but I kind of understand the new Bob. It was like one of those kind of, you know, back and forth things. And I'm like, yeah, that's the conundrum. That's the thing. Like, you want to be creative, but you also have to work within a system. That's a really good way to put it.
I complimented you. I can't remember if it was on air or not, but I'm assuming it was before we started. I complimented you on your newest video where you sit down on the park bench and you sit on a bench you made and you discuss just some introspective thoughts while you're working. I thought it was cool. It kind of reminded me of the podcast, actually. In between building, you're alone doing a little bit of a conversation and cuts back and forth. And the work you did was great. And it was fun to watch you do the work, but it was fun to kind of reflect on what and why you do it. That was really good. Yeah, it was great. Well, I mean, more of that I think will be good because you're passionate about those conversations.
Yeah, I think that,
got you.
That actually
got you.
You did. That actually came out of a conversation, you know, Forby, that has worked with me for many years, was kind of like, was pointing out to me that some of the conversations that we have here, this type of thing doesn't make it into the, I like to make stuff videos very often because we're trying to be efficient or we're trying to be concise or, and so it was, I don't know. I think I enjoy this kind of conversation with people who can have articulate thoughts, you know, and like we can go back in a circle and we can talk and we can brainstorm. And I enjoy this way more than just like making a table. But there's no reason that those two things have to be completely separate. Yeah. They have a lot to do with each other. And so his point was like, maybe try to like put some of the podcast ethos or whatever into building things and see if they work at the same time. And it was funny because one of the comments, I've had fantastic comments from people about it. It's been really, really nice. One of them was something like, introspective Bob is my favorite Bob or something to that effect. And I said, have you heard our podcast? And like linked to the podcast because it's very, you know, it's very possible that most of the people that watch the videos have no idea that this show or the other show even exists and stuff. So anyway, well, thank you, Jimmy. I appreciate that.
Yeah, sure, man.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not right. I recognize that. I'm just trying to give some perspective on, I don't think it's as black and white as, you know, if you build it, they'll come. I also don't think that you have to do it any particular way. So it's going to work different ways for different people at different times. I think it's changed a lot for me over the years and probably for you guys as well. And
he is right, though. Like, I will watch something that I will never, ever do if that person is really into it and they're super skilled.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I do that as well. Yeah. So, I guess he's not wrong. Any other thoughts on this?
You know, you may have taken the, I don't know who you're talking to, but when they said, you know, be inspired by Mr. Beast, it's, he's figured out YouTube. He is, that's like, I watch every interview with Mr. Beast because he doesn't have a home life. He only thinks about YouTube all the time. And I think there's things that you can take away from him. You can learn about like how it's making YouTube videos is about psychology, about getting somebody to first click on the video and then watch the video all the way through. That's a skill. So I think there's things you can take away from that, but apply it to who you are and who your audience is. Right, everything has to be like I'm yelling at the camera,
sure.
And everything, and we're doing the Jimmy cut where we cut out every little space and rearrange the words and make it all super condensed. And those videos are stressful for me. I don't feel good about myself after watching the super high-paced videos. And I can see that Mr. Beast has slowed it down a little bit. One of his editors, he's not a current editor, but Hayden Hillier Smith, who's just a phenomenal YouTube editor, has a great podcast, and he talks about where he was trying to tell Mr. Beast, you need to slow it down. You need to, like, people will watch if you're being engaging. So you can see the videos are starting to slow down a little bit more, and he's not yelling at you throughout the entire videos. I watch every Mr. Beast just because it's a spectacle. And if I'm inspired by anything, I'm just inspired by the ideology of his videos. How can I apply that to what I do without doing the hold my pee, how long can I bandsaw type thing?
Yeah, right. Yeah, this particular conversation was not that direction.
Gotcha.
But yeah, but I mean, I would agree. He absolutely, Mr. Beast absolutely knows what he's doing. I just don't want to do what he's doing. So from a psychological and like logistics perspective, I get it. Yes, he has a lot that I could glean and you know, apply to my own thing, and everybody could. I think the big thing, and this was a personal conversation that, you know, I'm not going to give all the backstory for and everything, but I think the big pushback from me in that moment of that was emotionally heightened and all the stuff was, I want anything that I produce, that I put out there, to be, I'm not expecting everything to be impactful. It's not going to change the world. Every video I made is not going to like affect a person at a personal level. I recognize that it's just a video about a box or about a table or whatever, but I want it to be in the up and to the right of humanity, right? I want it to be something that pushes somebody to good, to up, to better, to something there. And I feel like a lot of the things that are currently, not just Mr. Beast, but a lot of the things that are currently popular don't do that. And I don't, and that's fine. If that's what people want, it's there. I don't need to be that for them to have the things that they want. I want anything I do to just push us in a good direction, in an uplifting something. And because of that, my standard, however realistic or unrealistic that is, my standard is in place for what I will and what I won't do and what I want to produce and what I want to put out there. And I'm willing to sacrifice popularity and money and big numbers to stick to those guidelines.
You had that same mentality since day one. And that's the type of thing that lasts forever. Like candy videos, like Mr. Beast challenge videos, those videos, I don't know that they are timeless. They're not. I think the clones, the Mr. Beast clones, they seem to come and go, but you've been around for 10 years, and I think you're going to be around for another 10 years because you've had these standards. And I don't think we make candy videos. I might add a little bit of sugar to my videos, but I don't think I make candy videos. Like Jimmy says, like I'm adding to the vault, the whole bucket.
Yeah. And I appreciate you saying that. I'm not trying to like toot my own horn that I'm some.
I'll
like,
toot your horn for you.
Great. Well, please don't toot my horn. I'm not trying to say that my. It sounded very self-righteous, and I didn't mean for that it to sound that way. I just have a standard that I'm not willing to shift, and I'm okay with what that's going to limit me to be, you know, from a view perspective and whatever. I mean, I could make like. I don't know that I could make a Mr. Beast style video, but if I made that, it would probably pay for like my year, you know, versus the stuff that I'm currently doing. But I guess back to the original question is I'm passionate about a few things and I'm willing to stick to those guns at the detriment of views.
And that's why your core audience loves you. And that's why we love you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Jimmy, what are you passionate about?
Hopefully I didn't.
I'm passionate about my YouTube channel. Honestly, it's funny because Kevin said to me yesterday, when do you think you're going to stop with the one video every week? I said, well, it's 45 to 50 videos a year, right? So it's almost every week. But I said, what else would I do? I said, this is my job and I enjoy doing it. And every week I discover new skills and I improve on old skills and I meet new people. I was like, what else would I do? I said, unless I got a job hosting a TV show full time, which I wouldn't be able to do. So that would be the only thing that would keep me from doing this day to day. Unless I got like a major job at the government doing cool secret YouTube videos. I don't know. What would take me away from this? I have no idea.
Cool secret YouTube videos for the government.
But they would hire Casey before they would ever hire me. There's a lot of people in front of me. They would hire Casey or the other sexy cool guy in Canada with all the tattoos on his fingers. What's his name? The
Peter
camera
McKinnon?
Guy.
Peter McKinnon.
Yeah, you know, they would hire him before they would hire me. But what else? I said, what else am I going to do? This is what I do. I make cool things and I document it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's it. That's what I really enjoy doing. Sometimes the videos are stressful. Like I said, I always go through the four phases of the creative process. Love it. Wow, this is interesting. Oh my God, why did I try this? And oh, this is cool. Yeah, it's always the same process. And the challenge of working my way through it. Some of them are really long, like The Barn. I met some friends this weekend. They're like, what's going on with that barn? You going to finish that barn? I'm like, I'd like to. I said, I'm working on it right now while we talk. It's going on in my mind. I'm trying to juggle where I'm going to get $20,000 worth of windows from. I said, it's always going on in the background. It's like my screensaver is The Barn. And then in the short term, there's the new truck video I want to do. I've been talking about it for a long time, doing the new bed of that truck. And whatever's in between. So there's various levels of projects I'm super passionate about that just are on a different trajectory. But what else would I do? I had a conversation with a production company a couple weeks ago. I don't know if I said it here or said it there, but I go, okay, everything's perfect. The perfect network, the perfect this, the perfect that, the perfect talent, the perfect production company, editors, everything. Everyone's Grammy Award winning. I go, am I going to be offered more than $5,000 a week or an episode? And they go, nope. I was like, what is the point? What is the point of chasing this dragon? I said, it's pointless. Why do you call and reach out to me and ask me to be in these project pitches? It's like, it's never going to work. It's never going to work financially. I said, I'm not a 20-year-old kid just starting my career where $4,000 or $5,000 an episode would be amazing. They're like, I know. I said, so the TV business is dead, so what else am I going to do? You know?
David, what about you?
Let's get hired at a toy company to come up with stupid ideas.
I think I'm passionate about making videos and trying to create. So the pieces that I'm making, I'm passionate about that, and I see that as I see what I make as art, and I see the video as art. So those two things have combined into one thing. So I'm really passionate. Like Jimmy said, I'm passionate about my YouTube channel. It is why I don't have a product, because I don't have the time. I've thought about this. I thought I should have a product. All the other YouTubers have a product they sell. I should have one too. I don't have the time. I don't have the passion to come up with a product. I thought I had something. I looked into it. It didn't work. It would take me away from the thing that I love, which is making videos. So I don't have a product. Sorry.
Well, your videos are the product.
My videos are the product.
You don't have a manufactured thing. Yeah. But cool. All right. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters. Big thanks to everybody that helps us out over there. Actually, you were talking about Jason Brown. He just signed up like minutes ago to be a Patreon supporter. So thanks, Jason. Like while we were recording this,
that's funny because I sent him a message. We were covering his topic.
Yeah, so big thanks to Jason and everybody else over there that helps us out. It matters. It makes the show go. We don't have sponsors. It's the thing that makes us be able to do the show, to set aside the time, which I'm really grateful for, honestly, because I know the three of us, we would probably not get together and have any kind of this conversation if we didn't have like a good reason to. And this has become such a staple of, for like 30 years that we've been doing this show, it's become a staple of my week to have this type of conversation. 31? Yeah, I was
31 years.
Every week. So I think it's awesome. Big thanks to them because they make it possible. So thank you to everybody at every level that helps us out over there. But we always want to call out our top supporters. They go above and beyond. That is Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Chad's Custom Creations, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott Oram, The New Janky Workshop, Stu Morrison, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, The Web Ranch Woodworks, and Chad Tree Creative. Also, we got a message this week, and it said, well, crap, guess I have to become a Patreon supporter now, from Chad McIntyre, because last week we talked about them all being the Chads.
Oh, yeah. That's
and
sweet.
He was a Chad. So, Chad McIntyre, welcome to the group and to the Chads, and thank you so much for the support.
Sounds really like a horror movie, The Chads.
The Chads. If you want to join that group and you get the after show, no matter how much you support at, you get the extra podcast, separate feed. You can go to patreon.com/makingit. You can make your name Chad or anything else that you want to over there. Doesn't matter. We're just grateful for the support. So go check it out. Get the after show. And big thanks to everybody over there. Very grateful. Do you guys have anything to recommend this week?
I this is an old one I recommend all the time, but Whistling Diesel
oh my God.
Destroying a $400,000 Ferrari is awesome. I think it's awesome. Aside from the sensationalism of it all, it just reminds you not to take yourself too serious.
Did you get to the end of the latest video?
He can afford to take himself not so serious, but I think it's awesome. Oh, what, where he goes farming with the Ferrari?
That one? At the end of the Ferrari video, the screen goes black, and he goes, there's fire, fire, fire. Yeah. And then hang around for part two.
Yes, 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 yes.
So I'm waiting for part two.
Film.
It's so ridiculous. Yeah.
I was funny, because it's the only time I ever watch anybody, and I'm like, okay, where's this going? And I look at the red line and see how much time is left. I'm like, oh, there's not enough time left. This has got to pay off soon. That's great. It's just, he opens the video by saying, we're going to do an endurance test of the Ferrari. He goes, let's see how strong the mirrors are. And then he opens the hood. And he's looking for tools. He finds a Sawzall, and he cuts the mirror off of with the Sawzall. He's that wasn't strong, was it? He goes, yeah, that's a $10,000 mirror. He's like, wow, that wasn't that strong. It just reminds us as the viewer, don't take yourself too seriously. It's really funny. I just hope he doesn't kill himself, because that's going to get caught on camera.
Man, he's driving through that field. I'm like, if that car just hits something and flips. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
He's driving through, I was on the phone, so I don't know if it was like a field of melons or something. He's just plowing through a field with a Ferrari doing whatever, 70, 50 miles an hour. And there's just like stalks flying and he's like sliding sideways. It's crazy. Oh, that reverse Pittman maneuver he did.
Just barely misses the rock. Yeah. Yeah.
He comes backwards at the camera going severely fast and then does a quick cut and spins forward, which is a skilled car driver's move. I guess he's obviously getting more and more skilled doing these crazy things.
I've told you the story about me seeing somebody do that on the street, right?
No.
I'm going to tell you that in the after show.
Ooh, teaser.
Okay. Ooh, teaser. Fire, fire, fire.
film.
All right, David, what'd you get?
I was struggling to find something, and then so I'm going to recommend somebody with millions and millions of followers. Are you guys
cool?
I've been obsessed with this guy lately. Are you guys familiar with Harry Mack, the freestyle rapper?
No, I gotta watch.
Okay, freestyle rap. I'm always kind of in awe of it. This guy takes it to the next level. His skill, I don't even know how he could be better. It is so phenomenal. So basically he goes into a crowd and he'll just randomly go up to people and he'll ask four people, like, give me a word. Just give me a word, and he'll collect these four words and then he'll do a freestyle rap about the four words. And then he's also playing off of the environment. And There's nothing that I can
say. I think I've seen a prop video.
There's nothing that I can say that represents his actual skill at doing this. It is just absolutely phenomenal. It kept showing up in my TikTok or Facebook doom scrolling feed, and eventually I followed him on Facebook. I'm like, you know what? I got to go to the real channel. I got to go to his YouTube channel, and you get a little bit more substance when you go to the YouTube channel. So I'm just blown away that anybody could have this level of skill at what they do. Phenomenal.
Do you happen to know, did you guys follow Blind Fury? Do you know who Blind Fury is?
I remember you talking about him.
Yeah, I talked about it. You got to watch him. He's still out there rapping. He's like a little bit over the hill for a rapper, but he raps on his live. He's blind. He was born blind, and his name is Blind Fury, and he's an incredible, the battle rap. You got to look at the old battle raps of Blind Fury when he would do the MTV battle raps. He was like the ultimate Grand Wizard champion. He won every competition, and it's funny. He can't see. But
oh, that's right.
They go. Somebody must tell him what these guys look like, or you know the things, and he can always get somebody hard. It's so funny. Mm. And then lately, I've been watching this Melly Mel Eminem drama unfold, and a lot of old Eminem freestyles keep popping up on my YouTube. And there was one funny one last night where he's on a mic just freestyling somewhere in the world, and the guy, the producer who's in the studio with him, just like reaches in, like you see his head pop on camera and go. Headphones, and then Eminem just starts rapping about headphones, and then he leans back and leans and goes refrigerators, and then like Eminem starts like taking the word refrigerator and uses it in the rap. The guy's just like throwing words into the mix. It's funny.
Wow.
But there's lots and lots and lots of Eminem freestyle stuff out there as well from 20 years ago. Now that he's 50, you know, Eminem's 50 years old.
That's not right.
It's unbelievable.
Crazy. Well, mine is going to top both of yours in interest level. It's a SketchUp walkthrough.
No way. As long as you're passionate SketchUp. About it, Bob, I'll watch it.
Okay, so I think it's SketchUp. I don't know. Somebody at Forbes sent me this video this week, and it's basically a guy. I don't know anything about the channel. I think he just designs buildings and stuff in SketchUp, and then he walks through the construction. The cool thing about it is that it lets you see. This one is about an A-frame. And so he sent it to me as like, here's some inspiration. Don't forget you want to do an A-frame, you know. And the cool thing about it is it walks through from the foundation in like 7 minutes, the foundations all the way up to framing and sheathing the entire thing. And you can see a building come together for him just explaining, you know, use this for the joists, you use this for the floor, you use this for the rafters. And it's very simple when you see it, and it is one of those things when I look at, we talk about like the big long projects. When I think of building an A-frame, I think it's a house. I'm building a complete building from scratch. And that's super daunting. So it sounds like something I should just continue to push down the road, you know? And then when you see it like built up layer by layer over 7 minutes, you're like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work there, but it's not confusing. It's not, you know, it's physically a lot. But it's not a lot.
We take it a step at a time, like I'm building a barn. But
and so it was kind of just gratifying to watch somebody very at a normal pace, just kind of a person walk through. This is what you do, and then you add this thing, and then you put this here. And so, if for nothing else, just to get a perspective of an entire home, how you would build it from the ground up, and just see it, you know, in SketchUp happen. Maybe watch it. Maybe don't. I don't know. It was interesting to me. Maybe not to anybody else, but that's what I got. Well, anything else?
I think that's it.
Yeah, that's it. Cool. All right, I have a story to tell. Right. Then
keep the questions coming. In the after show, it helps. We can't come up with topics on our own anymore.
Yeah, that's true. 31 years of this show, we have run the well dry.
But we don't have any passion.
Anyway, all right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Love you.